Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the 150th episode. We are halfway through the hundreds already. You know, we definitely haven't been doing the same frequency, if you will, or volume of podcast, but we've certainly making our way through the hundreds. So how are you, my friend?
Man, it's great to be back here. I'm thrilled. We survived.
You didn't kill me. I guess you're right.
Yeah. You didn't resort to violence. Be like, oh yeah, well, blam.
Well, we've maintained civility through this entire thing. That's
And to that, you, sir, are a gentleman and a scholar.
Likewise, my friend. Okay, so before we get into this, of course, for our listeners all over the world, here in America and beyond, thank you for tuning in to wherever you are tuning in. And in lieu of the last podcast, Alex Jones, we obviously haven't said anything too inflammatory to get off kicked off our hosting sites, so hopefully we can maintain the civility and
nowhere near his level.
I don't believe in lizard people yet, and I don't think all mass shootings are false flags, so
no,
I think we're probably good.
I will say this, we don't take it that far, but songs like David Bowie's Space Oddity were written ground control to Major Alex. Where have you been marooned to, Alex?
I don't know. That's a good question.
So, if David Bowie is writing songs like "I'm Afraid of Americans," that could very well be about Alex Jones. I mean, you've entered a new realm, Alex.
Yeah, he's taking this somewhere else. That's for sure.
He's graduated. I mean, when you've got it to the point where people are going, man, where are the days of good old Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh? when pundits are longing for those two names, I actually heard this on NPR. Somebody said, could we just have Rush back? I'm going, wow.
Well, at least you could attack them for their political ideology. I mean, where do you start with lizard people? I don't know.
Well, see, that's what's really and truly bizarre about his deal for me. Because, okay, I'm not saying I agree with it, folks, so big asterisk here. I get the whole false flag thing because I'm going, well, at least he's consistent. Again, I'm not saying he's got a case there. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the whole reptilian thing, that is so far. You remember that site? It has some crazy stuff on it, but some of it's interesting. The Illuminati Watcher site, I sent you.
I've never seen it. I probably come across it, but...
Well, I sent it to you because it was an interesting article. Every now and then he writes something really deep on, like, the Knights Templar or something that I find interesting to read. But this is where... that's not Alex Jones, but this is where kind of this type of stuff comes out when they're talking about, hey, and there's this... And there is a really creepy, weird old picture of Queen Elizabeth where her eyes look like slits, okay? And there's some pictures that... of people with what looks like current technology way in the past. I get that. What I don't get is how he managed to tie that into his political coverage.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe this has been going on.
Built the fan base.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think people just... I think people get...
that desperate for answers?
Well, it's beyond that. I think whatever conspiracy theories, there's a couple good... articles written out there about conspiracy theories and why people gravitate to them. I think it's like a finality to, and it explains something that just can't be explained, whether that's political ideology, religious, superstition, whatever you want to name. I'm not lumping superstition in with religion, but I'm just saying things that we don't have good answers for. Like, for example, the Kennedy assassination. We just don't know. And so for a lot of people, I think there's a finality, whether it's a wacky idea or not, regarding those things that we just don't have answers for. And so conspiracy theories really fascinate people because it provides a solution to a problem, I guess, or an unanswered event. So I think for someone like you and I, it's we don't go down the conspiracy theory rabbit hole because I pretty much retain an open mind for the most part and accept the things that we really just don't know about, like a Kennedy assassination or something like that. I mean, maybe we will down the road, but it's not worth my time to really dig into it to find the same answers that thousands of people have found, the same evidence over and over. I mean, there's so it, I don't need to attach.
So you can enjoy all those redundant meetings at Walter Reed where we discuss the same thing for 3 hours only to come in the next day and find out that some civilian bureaucrat overlord had overturned the whole thing.
Oh,
enjoy that?
Those were the most productive. Those were the most productive. At least we were
this all, magic moment.
At least we were all miserable together.
Well, that note of Orwellian dialogue, I just sent you an interesting, you can just enjoy the headline of what I just sent you. My former modern political hero just took it one step farther.
Okay, so I was going to ask you this, and this podcast episode may wind up being a little bit everything, but we will get to the meat of this podcast, and that is the definitive race for the Democrats, presidential Democratic race in 2020. But dude, my phone's been down for part of the weekend. My phone's been down for part of the weekend, and that's primarily where I get most of my information. So,
blessed.
And so I jumped on today. I'm like, okay, we're going to do a podcast episode. I know what we're going to do, but let me just jump on and see what's going on. And boy, oh boy, Rudy Giuliani does not fail.
It's the truth, folks.
Dude, and goodness gracious, the correlations between 1984, slavery is freedom, ignorance is...
Ignorance is strength, war is peace. I get it. With that, all right, folks, let me, believe it or not, I'm going to try and pull a Rudy Giuliani here.
Okay, well, hold on. Let's say what he said. He said, truth isn't truth.
No. Taken by itself,
that's what he said. But
yes, that is what he said.
However.
Now, looking into the interview, there was a little bit of back and forth on it, and what he was saying in response to NBC host Chuck Todd, which... Everyone, for those that don't know, the NBC doesn't even pretend, while they try and claim they're balanced, but the reality is they're not. Mm-hmm. Just like Fox tries to claim they are, they're not. But Mayor Giuliani said what he said. Full disclosure, in 2008, I was a believer in Giuliani because I felt like he was the only person capable of defeating who I felt was going to be the next president, Senator Barack Obama. I'm saying as far as Republicans go, I feel like he was the guy. I own a book of his that I bought. So I'm speaking the past. So that's full disclosure. But that was 10 years ago. Okay. I don't know what happened. I don't want to insult him. I know that he had a brilliant legal mind. And for those that are in denial or aren't familiar with New York City before now, there was a time not so long ago when you and I were kids, Nate, that you wouldn't have dared ride the subway alone. You certainly wouldn't have ridden at night. New York City was described with a one-word headline once upon a time by the New York Times, and that one word was ungovernable. Hmm. Well, here we are today. So I have immense respect for the man. Everybody knows his presence after 9/11. With that, this interview was a bit of a back and forth about whether or not the president should appear before the special prosecutor, and there was an exchange about the disconnect between the two camps of what's real, what isn't, and the Trump administration has obviously been far more vocal about this. Robert Mueller doesn't have a whole lot to say about anything publicly, which is smart, but so we don't really know what's going on between these two camps, but we do know there's a massive gulf between the two, and to bring this little rambling deal to a close, my point here is he wasn't coming out. He didn't start the interview by saying, just so you know, truth isn't truth. It was him saying to Mr. Todd, okay, the set of facts that you're saying is going to be presented here, well, that's not the set of facts that are being agreed upon by the administration. So it was a screwball way to say this. But the closest example is, and I've mentioned this before, the Frost-Nixon interviews that got turned into a it was a bad movie factually, but the acting was good. Frost-Nixon, where the movie attempted to – President Nixon had a similarly unfortunate statement after his presidency. In the late 70s, he told Australian journalist David Frost that, well, if the president does it, then it's not illegal. Well, so the film took that statement and juxtaposed it with a discussion, an argument about the Watergate break-in. And it's this big dun-dun-dun dramatic moment where Richard Nixon just admitted to – ordering and covering up the break-in at the Democratic National Campaign headquarters, because if he did it as president, it's not illegal. That's not the context in which he said it. In reality, in the book, David Frost's book on the interviews that he did with President Nixon, it was around the bombing of Cambodia and the Viet Cong base camps there that were supplying the North Vietnamese troops during the war. So his point there was, well, I ordered the bombing and the bombing went through, so it's not illegal. You know, a very different context there. So that's kind of what I'm driving at here is, okay, truth isn't truth is a terribly unfortunate thing to say.
Yeah.
But you see what I'm driving at? He was addressing the Gulf there. I would have phrased it differently because this is right on the heels of the president saying at a rally, what you're seeing and what you're reading is not what's happening.
Yeah, and that's where, I mean, it's easy to bridge those two together and say, look, this guy's talking about fake news, the enemy is the press of the people, and truth isn't truth. And it just sounds so Orwellian at base value. Look, in conclusion, Giuliani just needs to not do interviews with, I mean, his...
Or maybe he does. Maybe that's what he's being told to do, is go in there and obfuscate.
Maybe. I don't know. It's just like, dude, you're not making... Here's the thing. If Trump's got a base, we all know that. They're not going to budge. It doesn't matter what happens. However, if we're talking about the middle of the road that's like, I don't know, like, I kind of like that policy move, it always just...
about winning the me.
It just negates everything. There was a couple things. So Trump brought up something the other day that I thought, that I've talked about, maybe on this podcast, but at least held this view for a while.
Did you put him onto it?
No, I didn't. He wants to, and this is one type
of... Did you make a deal with him?
No deal. That he would like to roll back reporting for public companies, publicly held companies. So, for example, instead of going from quarterly reporting, we would go to 6 months.
And he got that from a summit at the White House of business leaders.
Yeah, and
that was a suggestion that was made.
And most people don't think about this, but even if I lean more left, for whatever reason, I like this in terms of allowing for more creative creative opportunities within businesses, so that
it would lower accounting costs.
There's a lot of things it could do. Obviously, the critique to that is that people are less it's easier to cheat and it's harder to follow the finances of companies. I'm in one a little bit more in favor of allowing more flexibility in terms of reporting and in a 6 month period or twice a year, because I think it drives more long term perspective than it does short term.
So we should keep you away from the books then, though. Given so you've got family. Your mother's a CPA, right?
No finance.
Is this an accountant?
No finance in my family.
Okay. Well, yeah. Okay. So that's different, because I thought that we were pretty much getting to, you were about to admit to conspiracy.
No conspiracy here. I think the point being, like, that's a really good, I think personally for me, that's something like, okay, look, I can get on board with this, and it doesn't change my fact that I'm still on board with it. But it's like, for someone who might be like on the fence for this policy stuff, this stuff that Giuliani does, it's just like, dude, you're negating any sort of forward progression that you have by just, because the media is going to run with that way more than they're going to run back. They're going to run with, you know, the potential critique of twice a year reporting. Anyway, that's sort of my in conclusion with that. But
I wonder, what really kind of, we know how the president feels, obviously, because he's the one that called the business summit and he's the one that just proposed this potentially beautiful idea, potentially conspiratorial idea. I'm watching you. But I wonder how the front runners in the Democratic Party for the presidency would feel about it.
Smooth transition, my friend. Well,
was it?
What we're doing here is talking about those 2020 Democrats for the presidential bid.
Yeah, because you were making me uncomfortable with your conspiracy.
Sorry. So, as we do know, that this is roughly 2 years away, two and a half almost years away.
We make $1 million overnight, Nate, I swear to God.
Hey, I won't say if you won't say. But what we do know, in the 2.5 years up to this 2020 race, the kickoff for presidential voting season is, 18 months away from the first vote. And we've already got some, at least one candidate. I think it's Delaney from Maryland who's officially announced his run.
So Avenatti hasn't declared yet?
Not yet. So obviously, I think what's important about this is, I think you agreed to this, is the Democratic Party is going through a period of sort of reframing, reshaping, renaming. What is it? What are we? What are our priorities?
Kind of like what Wells Fargo is going through?
Yeah. Well, yeah, they are. They're trying.
I'm kidding. I don't mean to insult the Democrats like that.
Well, yeah. Well, you did. It's okay. So anyway.
Shameful Wells Fargo. You heard the latest, right? They admitted this week that at least a few hundred people lost their homes due to early foreclosure because of an error in their their spreadsheet and code. Yeah, so that's great.
Jesus. They can't win right now, man. Poof.
The American people can't win.
No, they can't.
Anyway, my apologies.
No worries. So in this kind of reframing, reshaping, and I think on the next podcast we'll touch a little bit more on what this reframing is, and it doesn't mean broadly to the Democratic Party, but at least left-leaning thinking. But I think what we're seeing here is a list, because I think on the Republican side, you have a lot of the same contenders. I don't think you have any too many dark horses. And for president, yeah, I for the Republican Party.
Is Kasich going to run?
Probably. I mean, at the end of the day, what you said is I think it will be very hard to unseat the current incumbent.
We're not talking about a representative. Nothing against the House of Representatives, but it's clearly easier to do for the presidency. I mean, no, yeah. It's not going to happen. I mean, he would have to not be seeking office or have something drastic would have to happen.
Yes. So there was an article written on CNN by Chris Caliza and then Harry Enten. And they wrote the definitive ranking list for the Democratic 2020. And I know it's a little far off, but I think you and I both decided that, well, let's go ahead and talk about this because
it's saucy.
Yeah, it's gonna morph. We don't know what's gonna happen in 2.5 years or a little under 2.5 years.
It's fun though, because it's starting to take shape.
It is about to take shape. So let me go ahead and just read through this list of people quickly.
Okay. Start at number 10.
We'll work backwards.
Make them really hang in. They got to work for it.
Okay. Jesus. You okay? All right. I need to call somebody. Okay. So we'll start at number 10 on the definitive rankings list, and we'll walk through these.
Are you reading theirs or are you making your own?
No, this is theirs. I like their list. I have not thought of one myself, so we'll go ahead.
No names are different for you? Like there's not a all right, we'll get started.
I mean we can look here, but I think the two people, yeah, I don't really see anybody else emerging as of right now.
No Howard Dean for you, huh?
What's that?
No Howard Dean for you, huh?
No.
Bringing him in.
So number 10 is quite frankly, I apologize because I don't quite know how to pronounce his first name, but I think it's Sherrod, Sherrod Brown.
Yeah, it's
Sherrod. Brown. He's a Midwesterner, a senator from Ohio, and he has a fairly liberal record, and I guess they term him the Midwestern populist, which seems to be running in line with the populist movement throughout the world.
Isn't that kind of redundant?
Yeah, it's kind of weird, huh? But
Midwest seems to be it's libertarians and then moderates. I mean, so yeah. Anyway.
So, I guess they did say that he doesn't really have an interest in running, but he's up for re-election for the Senate. And
why the hell is he on the list?
I'm not entirely sure.
I'm not interested in running. I'm not on the list.
Yeah, I guess they like his track record, although they do bring up one issue with him, and that's some questions in his personal history. So I said, well, what is that? So apparently he had an old divorce in like 1986 in which he was accused of beating his wife, ex-wife.
Well, yeah. That does raise an eyebrow or
so.
Thing.
Divorce that touches almost the majority of the population in the United States. However, beating your ex-wife does not.
Does it touch you and I? I mean, show us on the doll where the Donald touched you, Nate.
No, he's touched me everywhere. Number 9. Now, you take a little contention with this list at number 9. However, I think as this. What's that?
You elaborate as to why it stayed this way. It's okay. Fine.
So this is Mitch Landrieu. And he, of course, we've talked about him quite before, two-term mayor of New Orleans. He is the president of the, what do they call it, the mayor's...
like the National Mayor's Association.
Association, yes, association.
I don't think he is technically anymore since he's out of office. But you should probably recount to the folks, maybe we should provide it in the show notes, what really... I mean, obviously, it wasn't his claim to fame as far as nationally and locally, but it was his claim to fame to the under 40 crowd. That
there's a couple things, and I'll start with the obvious ones. He is obviously a Caucasian gentleman in a majority black city. They have a substantial black voting bloc, and he also he's a good guy, good speaker, good orator. If you ever have listened to him, you could probably some of his most famous speeches or speech in general is about the removal of Confederate monuments in New Orleans proper.
And great speech.
This is great. Actually, fantastic speech. He's got a book that's out talking.
You know, whether you agree with it or not, it's a great
speech. It's a great speech. He does have a book out, or I believe it is out now, talking about the removal of those Confederate monuments, which I think was a good move on his part. Writing the book, yeah. I mean, his spot.
Gives him a chance to elaborate.
Yeah, it does. And I think, I mean, for a lot of people, there's no elaboration needed. It was the right thing to do. For other people, they're probably not going to read it.
Whether it was or it wasn't, I was tired of all the outside influence. And I'm not talking about the media coverage. I'm talking about just the chaos because of the people coming in from out of town. Because I went down during all that going on. We were talking about this at the time that I went down there. And the troublemakers were all out of town.
Yeah.
People getting arrested on both sides because there were hellions, there were hellraisers on both sides, and not one that was arrested when I went through the paper, the Times-Picayune, the whole weekend of the trouble, not one was from New Orleans.
Yeah. I think you'd like to see him a little higher on the list. I think as a candidate, I would like to see him higher on the list, but I don't think he's quite there in terms of visibility nationally.
Right. As a Democrat or someone who leans Democrat, and he's probably not progressive enough for the bulk of the party, but I think you would do well to hope I think he could, if nothing else, let's say the Joe Bidens and the Elizabeth Warrens, per se, they really take, let's say they run the whole show, right? I think Landrieu stands to make the race more competitive in a good way. I think he's going to push those candidates.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think just he's a good package deal in terms of a good moderate.
Very charismatic.
Yeah, very charismatic, moderate Democrat. Has some. So they talked about some
from the Gulf South.
Yeah, they had some taking issue with some of his infrastructure track record in terms of a project that he wanted to repave all the roads in New Orleans, but it still hasn't even got off its feet yet. Look, who knows if that's his problem in a leadership sense or just bureaucracy that makes that a hard thing to do.
Always going
to
be redoing the roads in New Orleans. I mean, they do it in every city, but God, it's 70% of it's at sea level.
Yeah, if that's the major issue in his track record, I think he'll be just fine. Number 8 is, and I thought he might be a little higher on the list but looking into this looking into this a little deeper, I can see where this might be problematic, but that is Cory Booker. And Cory Booker was, I believe he was, maybe was the mayor of Newark at one point, or at least had a run for the mayoralship of Newark. And he's given a couple of great speeches at the Democratic National Convention, but the problem, African American gentleman as well. I think he's a good speaker. He's a strong presence. He's going to run into some issues in terms of his ties to Wall Street, and the article does address this a bit.
So he's got Hillary Clinton disease.
Well, what happened? It wasn't so. When I read into it, it wasn't quite as problematic as I thought when you just read it in terms of like his ties to Wall Street.
Was it as bad as hers?
No, because it wasn't like he was taking money from Wall Street in terms of
and then
speaking engagements.
And then refusing to release the transcripts.
Yeah, no. What he did is I believe he originally had supported a pro-immigration bill or something in terms of immigration that was fairly democratic in terms of progression and inclusion. But then a couple days later, he voted on rejecting Bernie Sanders' amendment for lowering prescription drug costs. So this put him into this sort of neoliberal ties to Wall Street. But when you really dig into it, it wasn't that he had some sort of capitalist mindset. I mean, in a way, it kind of is. But Big Pharma is from his district and from his state, and he was really voting in the interest of those businesses there, and probably campaign monies that had been given to him. So in a way, people consider him sort of a sellout.
We'll see.
I think at the end of the day, if that's the only thing he's really voted for in favor of big business, I think that's something he can sort of work his way through.
He could survive. Cause again, I'm not betting that the progressive wing is going to be happy with the direction the party takes in the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's either survival or principle at this point. Mm-hmm. They'll have to make a hash of it before they get it down. That's not me naysaying them. I'm just being realistic here, but anyway,
yep. Number seven is Steve Bullock, and he is a two-term governor from Montana. And the problem with him, and they bring this up in the article,
he's not going to be hard left being from Big Sky country.
No, not necessarily hard left. The other problem that sort of is an issue sort of with Mitch Landrieu as well is his visibility nationally. So again, there's nothing within his voting record or with his growth in Montana. Montana's a very, in terms of space and people, is a very underpopulated state within the union. So in terms of leadership, in terms of the issues,
copper state?
What's that?
The copper state?
Montana?
Yeah, isn't it?
I don't know. Is it?
Whatever.
Pardon my ignorance. I think in terms of his leadership and the issues that are going the issues in Montana today, I don't know, just because of major urban areas that are not really as prevalent in Montana that he is.
Issues do they have? I mean, what are they?
Well, so big issues in Montana, me being from sort of the Front Range here, a lot of that has to do with environment and mineral rights. And
there's nobody there. How is environment an issue? I mean, what would that bill look like? What was in it?
Well, I'm not saying there. I'm not really pointing anything to anything in terms of voting record, and there really isn't much in terms of.
No, but I mean, like, how are they having environmental controversies to even debate over?
Well, I mean, there's a lot
one
there.
Person
it's,
for
so,
how many
so,
miles?
So oil, mineral rights, environmental issues in terms of so public land management, DNLR stuff, forest fires, etc. I mean, there's just it's a different type of problem that's there, and I'm not saying that it doesn't affect a lot of people in the United States, but in terms of leadership as a two-term governor, I think there's good leadership that's there, and there's just a different type of issues in a place like Montana than there are in a Newark, New Jersey, or a New York, something that's probably more relatable to the average Democratic voter. I just think you see more Democratic voters from urban populations, et cetera. And so the issues that he has led in terms of his governorship are a little different from a lot of the other issues. I mean, obviously budget, et cetera, is there. But anyway, next.
You know, it's going to be a thriller out of Montana. You know, Mission Compostable. That's what we're getting at. I mean,
we can move to number six here, because this opens up. As the list gets closer to one, these candidates are a little bit more interesting. So the next one is Eric Holder. And if we know Eric Holder, you can remember him from the Obama administration as the the Department of Justice lead, and the former Jeff Sessions. So he is obviously considering his run in 2020. He will have a good backer in former President Barack Obama. And the one thing that he brings to the table on top of just his law background is this. He's actually from Queens, and that would be an interesting setup next to the incumbent President Donald Trump if he runs again, in terms of what he likes to say as New Yorkers know how to talk to other New Yorkers. I just don't see the same casual conversation that Donald Trump has with other candidates that Eric Holder would be willing to sort of stoop to that level. However, you brought up that he was willing to stoop to some levels in terms of, skin color, in terms of calling the president orange, and your I don't mean to throw you under the bus on this. Maybe this was just a precast thing we should have kept to ourselves.
No.
But maybe the hypocrisy that if that had been swung back his way or to the president's way, that there would be more uproar to that.
Right. But, I mean, imagine if there was a darker complected, someone with a higher melanin count, regardless of their ethnicity. If, for instance, you have these, there's Indians living in Asia that do this. There's also Indian Americans that do this. They use these, I don't know what's in them, but they're called lightening creams or whatever, but it's in the pursuit of looking lighter, looking more white. Don't ask me why, but you can look up these items, okay? Well, imagine that there was a joke made by a Republican candidate or a Republican office holder, whatever type, attorney general, whatever, making fun of the person for their complexion, this product. There would be an uproar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, so Eric Holder gets a pass making fun of the president's skin color?
Yeah. Well, for
Black American just coming out of the first Black administration, I don't know. I found it particularly tawdry and unsavory.
Mm-hmm. I think he's going to run into bigger issues than that. You brought it up in terms of the Fast and Furious. That was a DEA operation that kind of went bad. And
that ties into, ironically, one of the things that Alex Jones really didn't hammer on, maybe because this one actually contains some truth. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was that ties directly into the Las Vegas shooting. Because that guy, we never did really hear a high or tell of the long and short of how he was involved in that operation. But there was some weird, certainly some weird life situations that kind of put him as being involved in Fast and Furious. So I don't know. I think Eric Holder is one of those ones that he's going to make it interesting, and he's a good speaker. He's very well educated and obviously has a great resume. But I think he's going to give the Democrats more headaches than he's worth.
He could. Yeah, that's he could. Moving on to number five, and not exactly unsurprising, is
not sure how he's this low.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure either, but I think that in terms of Democratic voting,
the likelihood of him winning.
Yeah, this is Bernie Sanders, and of course he's the most beloved politician within the Democratic Party, but again, not really Democrat.
He's not a Democrat.
Yeah, so
that's
this
the thing is, that brings up to me real quick. You and I have talked about it before, not precast, but kind of a shadester with what he's pulling with the Senate nomination. Not that it really matters, and the Democrats in Vermont are okay with this. But long story short, folks, Senator Bernard Sanders, he's done this before, but it just kind of came out. Here's his path to the Senate, right? So he ran for and he recently received the Democratic nomination. But yet he holds office and will again as an independent who simply caucuses with slash votes along with. He's a Democrat in practical terms. Mm-hmm. But what he's doing is he's going to wait right up until the election to then refuse the nomination. He's going to be and run as an independent. And the reason he's doing that is so that there's no Democrat beside him. They don't have a jungle primary there or jungle election. So there won't be a Democrat on the ballot.
Yeah.
Because I guess there's the possibility that would split the vote and allow a Republican to win. I don't know. The Democrats in Vermont are okay with it. I read this. Their chairman saying, all right, cool. That's a little shady.
Yeah. Another reason he's kind of lower on the list is they make the argument that I think he might be a little, well, age could be one of those things, but another thing is he's sort of stuck in 2016. So sort of what you brought up in terms of independent.
Is everyone else.
Yeah, I know. So is everyone else. So we're looking closer to number one, the shining stars here on the top four of this definitive list.
Number four
has
been in a decent rapport with the president, though. She's interesting.
It's interesting. This is Kirsten Gillibrand. And, you know, this is the first, I believe the first woman on the list now. And of note, there's actually the next two are women as well. So the top four, three quarters of them are actually women. So she's
60%.
Yep. So she is obviously from New York as well. And not that that has anything to do with any connection between Donald Trump or not. And, you know.
No, but you're conspiring.
Yes, apparently I am. So, again, I think more to be seen on. I think she does, in terms of all three of these women on the list moving forward here, I think there is a movement for more women in politics. And I think that if, again, if there's going to be a woman that is elected to the White House, it's the Democrats are going to be the ones to do it. We'll just see if it's enough for the incumbent to beat the incumbent. So the next, another rising star, number three, is Kamala Harris. So Kamala Harris is a first-time Californian senator, African-American lady, and a first Indian woman to be elected to the Senate. She, if you look back on Kamala Harris...
Which is she?
She's both. Yeah. You can be both.
Oh, well, you know what? I tell you what. Here's the thing, and this is the truth, folks. There is 12.5% of me that is Creek Native American. You know, we don't have any casinos because Andrew Jackson just wiped us out during the Creek War. So I'm only 87.5% white, but I'm going to hammer that Creek from now on.
Well, is she Native American or Indian in terms of...
What is it?
I don't know. It's a good question.
You said she's black and she's Indian. I mean, either way, whatever.
Yeah. She has... whatever it is, and pardon my ignorance on this podcast episode, but what is more important than that is she's California. It's a massive Democratic donor state, so she would have the money there if she did run. She does come from a fairly law and order background, and so she was the attorney, which I believe she was the attorney general. Yes, the attorney general of California before running for the Senate. So she has had some place in terms of law for the attorney general, and then in the Senate as well. Honestly, definitely left-leaning, definitely not as moderate as some of these candidates. However, I do see her, if she can wrangle and deal with someone like an incumbent like Donald Trump, then I think she can do well. And there's some other issues some other ways that I think she could do well in front of the American public, in front of an incumbent Donald Trump. But I think as we get closer, we can dig into these things a little bit more. But
can we get a drum roll for, speaking of Native Americans, can we get a drum roll for number two, please?
Okay.
Woo!
Hold on. That was bad. Okay. Number two that she did make the top four list is Elizabeth Warren. Now, we talked about this precast. And not, I made my point and I'll make it quickly here. So yes, the one thing that an incumbent Donald Trump would use against Elizabeth Warren when it comes to his topical poking fun of and messing with other candidate is her, I guess, lack of integrity in terms of her heritage and her background. And at one point she was trying to make the case that she had Native American, and it turns out that was false. So I do believe that in terms of dark pasts that any candidate might have, so like beating your wife, et cetera, is going to be a tough one to talk through.
She beat her wife?
She did not. she's happily married. That I think if she's able to completely accept responsibility and be like, I don't understand why I did that, whether that was a plea to media or just whatever it was, that was stupid, my bad. Let's talk about consumer protection. I believe she can work through that, and I think that it would be tiresome for an incumbent like Donald Trump, because I think he would kind of be the only one that would really hammer this home. I think the American public eventually gets sort of bored and annoyed by him continually bringing that up in terms of what she actually is trying to do for the average American. You brought up the point, you said, like, well, look, late-night media continually hates on Trump. The one thing about that is, there is just endless fodder in terms of what the president does and new allegations and new things that come up that it's hard. It just keeps...
but I have a tough time. Forget the fact, oh, well, he's the president of the United States. You know what? I'll say it again. How dare the under 40 crowd in this country pretend to give a damn about propriety, okay? Yeah. I don't want to hear it. Like, look, I'm not saying that towards you. I'm saying that towards them, but give me a break. Because like the young lady I told you I worked with, just when he speaks, and also I'm going, okay, well, how many great speeches have you listened to? Do you listen to speeches? Do you care about speech writing? And this blank look on her face, I'm going, well, shut up.
Yeah.
I mean, so the man has a right in my mind to respond to the ad nauseum on late night. And I know you're not saying he doesn't have a right to it. Me personally, I was him, I wouldn't even acknowledge it existed. But he's gonna do what he does, and mm-hmm. I frankly, I mean, there's a whole lot of piling on that goes on. I think he's a good dose of their own medicine for him, frankly. Sure. I don't agree with it. I wouldn't tweet it, but
yeah,
it's kind of nervy when I hear the criticism of it.
Yeah. And so she does have a really good track record in terms of consumer protection. She's gone after big banks. She's written a lot of policy. So I think if she can do less of what Hillary Clinton did and just stick to policy, that's one thing that Hillary Clinton was incredible at, policy and et cetera, but it just didn't work at the time. So if she could do that, I think that she actually could sort of inspire and speak to the American people in terms of where they are at. In their sort of continuum or place in terms of big business and capitalism. So, number one, I didn't see this one at number one. However, I can't tell you who is at number one, but I think this is...
Well, I called.
You did, and I don't disagree with it, is Joe Biden. So...
Uncle Joe.
I do think in terms of polling, he's at the top of the 2020 field. He's been in politics for years, definitely older, but I think I don't know, man. I think, like they said in this article, there's no guarantee he wins the nomination, but if history holds, it's an indicator he'll be right there until the end. And I do think that, I think he's a safe vote. He's a safe nomination. I just don't know how that stands up next to Donald Trump.
Think about this. The president has even said, I believe it was to CNN, but he said that Joe Biden is my dream opponent. And I got to say, from a strictly macro neutral perspective, okay, all the fits that make news, heading and we'll be passing 30 April 2020. It's our fourth anniversary. So we'll be heading headlong into that. As we, right now, it's us and Fox News, it looks like, going to be on the traveling press corps. That's going to be some fun rides. With that, I got to say, I agree with the president here. Can you imagine? What could be better than going into, and I mean that seriously, what is better from a national political perspective and to our foreign audience, think about this, than Joe Biden, Senator Biden versus President Trump, okay? Mr. This is a big effing deal versus grabbing them by the think of it.
I know it could. It's got me, my imagination already rolling.
Oh, I know we got to roll, but I was about to say that it takes me to the most powerful nation in the world, the imagination.
And
oh my goodness, those three. Seriously, we could sports bars could. Take the sports off for the night and charge $5 to $10 cover, depending upon the metropolitan area, and have viewing parties for this. Dude, serious.
It could literally be pay-per-view.
Maybe you and I should do that. Mod State actually has an event, and we go to round for all three city debates. We'll go to a different city, and we'll make a – hey, they're all doing it. Let's make a profit off of this process.
Why not? Okay, so we'll see more. Obviously, this is the initial list. I will post it in the show notes, of course, if people want to read it themselves. There's a lot of good links to the candidates. But yeah, we're about 45 minutes here. We've got to record another one. So until next time, my friend.